Sad news this week as Mac publishing pioneer Stan Flack dies. We also chat about Seister, the purported Mac clone maker. My Mac Magazine podcast number 180.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
I'm Tim Robertson, the publisher of My Mac Magazine, and joining me right now is Sam Levin. Hello, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing well. How's everything with you?
Oh, fantastic. Lovely day here.
Well, you're going to join us for a little bit longer than usual. We're going to talk about Stan Flack here in a few minutes.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to put the Cool Mac picks on hold for a little while anyway.
It's fine.
And Guy Searle from Virginia. Hello, Guy.
Hello.
How are you this fine evening?
Oh, just trying to deal with the Pope traffic in this Washington, D.C. area, which has not been fun at all.
A little crazy, huh?
Yes, yes.
Well, first of all, let's take care of a little business from last week. Remember, we had Chris Siebold on last week, and he was pimping his new book, The Big Book of Apple Hacks.
Yes.
Which, by the way, was released today.
You know, I looked on Amazon earlier, and it was still saying that it wasn't out yet.
I got the PR from his publisher today saying that it could be ordered.
Who's the publisher?
O'Reilly.
Oh, O'Reilly. They have such cool MacBooks.
Well, cool. Chris Siebold, you know, he's been with MyMac for years now. He also with Apple Matters.
Yep.
Yes. And he's so talented, and he wrote this book, The Big Book of Apple Hacks. And it was really cool because last week, he offered to give one of these books away to one of our listeners. So we had a contest. I said, you know, send email to tim@mymac.com, put contest in the subject line, and randomly I'll pick somebody from that list. And we had a lot of entries. If you didn't win, hopefully you'll go buy a book now because Chris needs the money.
Yes.
go buy it. But we did have a winner, and his name was Larry Ballantyne. So congratulations, Larry. You're going to get the book, Big Book of Apple Hacks, courtesy of Chris Siebold, the author. I don't think he'll sign it for you, though.
No, and O'Reilly Press.
And O'Reilly Press, yep, absolutely. So congratulations to Larry, and thank you very much, Chris, for giving one of these books away on the podcast. Hopefully you'll sell a couple million of them, and when you're a millionaire yourself, you'll remember your good friends at MyMac.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my copy.
Still waiting for
That's
your
right.
copy?
Damn you, Chris Siebold!
He actually offered to send me one, and he said, if you want a copy, Tim, you know, I'll send you one. I said, yeah, I want a copy.
Yeah.
Of course. Even if I'm not in it. But you, on the other hand, are in it, Guy.
Yeah, I have no idea exactly what it was he used, how much of it he used. I'm guessing that he kind of called it from all the iWeb, you know, how-to articles that I did.
Well, I'm sure whatever he uses is going to be real fantastic.
Well, of course.
Let's jump over to Sam. Sam, what do you got for us this week on Cool Mac Picks? Mm. I'm looking forward to this. I know you've only got one product this week, right?
Well, I guess with the whole Stan Flack thing, I just took the wind out of the sails, and I was more concerned and thinking about him. But there's a new product. Actually, it's not new, but it's new for the retail scene. It's from a company called SRS Labs. Now, a lot of us know about SRS because those are the guys that make surround sound. Many TVs, audio recorders.
Use their technology.
Embed it, license it. My Sony TV has it built in. So when you turn it on, you get, you know, SRS. You don't have to have the extra speakers. It presents itself this rich, dynamic sound. And it's pretty awesome. So SRS Labs has created SRS iWow 2.0 for iTunes. So if you want to have this really, really rich sound incorporating and surrounding your, no pun intended, surrounding your iTunes library, you can buy this. It embeds it within iTunes.
Is it a plug-in?
It is a plug-in for Mac. It is a plugin. It's for Mac or PC. And I used it a while ago. Over a year ago, I tried it out with iTunes. It it's pretty remarkable, guys. It's fairly inexpensive. It's $29, and it's a download. You could buy it as a box copy. That's what's new about it. It's today. It's shipping a 2.0 version, and it's a full retail package. But you can go online. I'll give you the URL. It'll be on my Mac's site and my site. And you can have different settings, kind of like equalizers. You can turn it on or off at any time. And I tell you, it's a huge difference. It's way different than the equalizer of iTunes. I can't explain it until you try it. There's a free 14-day trial, so you could try it out and see for yourself. Once you have it, I think you'll want to keep it, and you'll want to pay for it. Here's the only gripe. The only gripe is once you have an iPod, it's a different story. It doesn't, follow your iPod. It's not embedded in the iPod. So unless Apple licenses SRS Labs plug-in technology, then it has to stick to iTunes on your Mac or PC.
Yeah, and I don't think Apple's going to do that. But it would be nice if they did.
I wish they would. Other companies have. And I understand why they wouldn't, because A, they don't want to pay for it, or B, pass that cost along to the end user. But when you hear it, especially try to connect some speakers to your MacBook, because it makes a big difference to have better speakers. But still, it's an unbelievable difference between having SRS iWow turned on and turned off. Just try it. It's free for 14 days, and I've been using it since the beta, and my only complaint is you don't get it with the iPod once you have an iPod.
Can't take it on the road with
you. You can if you take your MacBook or MacBook Pro on the road, but
not too many people are going to do that.
Well, yeah, some people will. For me, I'm an iPhone person now, and I'd rather have iWow than the equalizer turned off, quite frankly, once you hear it. Anyway, check it out. That is my sole Cool Mac picks of the day, and it's a good one, and SRS is proven leader with sound fidelity.
I tell you one of the a little funny story about bringing your computer with you in the car. I was driving to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and back and forth for a while as part of my job at the time. And I forgot to bring my iPod once, but I did have my laptop.
Right.
And I had a lot of MP3s and stuff like that on there. So I just plugged that into the car stereo.
Sure.
It was a direct connection. And I didn't realize that I had the radio up so loud the last time I had driven it. So, it was cranked way up. So I boot up the Mac, and good Lord, that startup, broke the windows in my car. Oh, my gosh. It was so funny. It was like, it was extremely loud.
but
cool.
By the way, speaking of SRS, when you go to the site, there's a complete demo. Just click on it. It says audio demo, and it takes you through a complete, it's visual, but it's audio as well. So you can listen without having to install anything right there. So
does it work good with headphones as well, or just speakers?
Yeah, anything. No, it doesn't matter. I just like to have a speaker plugged in my MacBook Pro because the fidelity is so much greater. But yeah, if you have headphones, it's probably better than just the speakers. The speakers on a MacBook Pro are
atrocious.
They're not great.
At the same time, there's not many laptops that do have nice speakers.
That's true.
Some actually have SRS built in, and they sound a lot better. Unfortunately, the MacBook Pro, they just need better speakers. So, but whatever. That's not why you buy a MacBook Pro, because of the audio. But
no, and there's a lot of good third-party speakers that you can hook up.
No.
And, that's true, though, with, I think, the new iMacs. I know a lot of people think the new iMacs sound pretty good. Unfortunately, the sound is at the bottom of the screen, and it points downward. So, you don't get a lot of fidelity that way. Somebody, and I don't remember who, it might have been a listener, and it might have been a staff member. I think it was a listener, and this was a while ago. He'd actually taken, the Post-it notes, and made a little L shape out of them and put them on the back of his Mac so it would reflect the sound off the post at him. And he said it worked really well. It sounded a lot better. So
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead. We're going to get to SciStar and what's going on in the Mac world a little bit later in the show. But right now, let's turn our attention to some sad news. On Monday of this week, Stan Flack, he created Mac Central and Mac Minute,
which we
passed away.
Which we used to use all the time.
We used to use Mac Minute as our news source all the time. Stan also posted links all the time, anytime we had a new show up.
Sure.
So he unfortunately passed away, and it was kind of like a wildfire. Every Mac website out there seemed like, there was a few exceptions, but most of them had a news story up, and most of those news stories have moved off the front page. And I didn't want it to kind of disappear. I didn't want it to be a 1 or 2 day news story because, let's be honest, Stan Flack was definitely a pioneer in online Mac journalism. I mean, he set the standard very, very high with Mac Central. So high, in fact, that Mac Publishing, the publishing arm of Macworld magazine, eventually bought the site for him. Unfortunately, it seems like they didn't know what to do with it.
No.
And if you go to Mac Central now, it just forged you to Macworld.
No, he defined Mac News. In my opinion, he was the defining point of, you know, bringing news to the Mac people. But you're right. You go to Mac Central, I don't know what it is. There is no Mac Central.
There is no Mac Central. It just forwards you to Macworld magazine site now.
And I said, guys, I've asked them, what is going on here? I mean, they took something that was...
Do you think it's a mindset of their internet site, as it is now, is really just a...
It's a conduit.
What's the word? It's a conduit for you to subscribe to the Macworld magazine, the physical Macworld.
I think that's it's a letdown. It's a total letdown and doesn't make me want to go. I don't go to Mac Central. I never, after it went away, I never go there. I only go to Mac Minute or Mac Observer. Now it's going to be Mac Observer. And
Mac Observer is a very good site.
You know, they're going to be the ones...
I think the Mac Observer is probably the closest to what Mac Central used to be.
Probably.
And for those who haven't been in the Mac scene for very long, and you're listening to this and you're wondering, oh, wow, it's a bummer that this guy died, but you don't know too much about him, just do a Google search on him. The top link right now is an interview that I did with Stan back in 1999. And that will give you a little bit of an insight, but it's really hard to imagine what it was. If you go back to the Wayback Machine, if you just do a Google search for Wayback Machine, it allows you to view what websites looked like in the past. And they go all the way back, I believe, to 1996 with Mac Central. And you can kind of see how it grew. Stan put together a stable of writers that was second to none. He had the biggest names with the best content at the time online. And he was doing phenomenally well. So it's what you see on the Mac web today, it would have happened without Stan, don't get me wrong. But it didn't happen without Stan. It happened with him because of the standard that he set. He was always a very big proponent of free speech. He always backed up his writers. Very timely when it came to news. And more importantly, at the time, he built a community around the site with the messaging board that was unbelievable. Everything that you could want when it came to your Mac was there. Everything from, hey, I need help. You post something up on his site. You will get, at the time, you would get hundreds of responses to help you out. I mean, it was just amazing.
He was on top of it.
Go ahead.
He was really on top of it.
And unfortunately, you know, when someone like him dies, it doesn't make waves.
Especially at a young age.
At a young age, absolutely. But it doesn't seem to make waves in the mainstream press. But a lot of what the mainstream press is doing online now is a direct descendant of what Stan was one of the first people to start. He actually started Mac Central as a downloadable edition, a downloadable magazine, if you will, about 3 months after I started my Mac. So he was kind of a competitor at the time, but not really. And the neat thing was, and this is a little bit of an inside Mac type of thing, but what a lot of the people that are listening to the show don't realize is how many friends that you make with your competitors. Because we're talking about Macworld. I've got friends at Macworld. We talk about Mac Minute and Mac Central, where Stan was, you know, the creator. But I was friends with Stan, even though he was a competitor for the same ad dollars that I was going after, which he won, by the way. So you don't see a lot of coverage in the mainstream press. You'll see it on the Macworld press, not Macworld magazine, you know, the Mac space world. But I don't want someone like Stan to be forgotten or just one day news. I think his impact and his legacy is such that he should be remembered, not just for how he died or when he died, or even that he died at such an early age, but he should really be remembered for what he created and what he kind of ushered in, mm-hmm. almost single-handedly.
Yeah, he was a real visionary. By the way, he was only 42.
Yeah, which is way too young. As someone who's 38 himself, 42 is way too young.
Well, how do you think I feel? I'm going to be 48 this year.
God. You're just an old man guy.
Oh, that's me. Get off my lawn.
So yeah. did you know Stan pretty well, Sam?
I knew him, you know, if he lived here for a while and then he moved. And if he would have stayed here, I would have gotten to know him, I think, a lot better. He lived in San Francisco. And then, what was it, 5 years ago or 7 years ago? I forgot. He moved to Spain.
Yep. And then finally back to Canada.
He came back to Canada. That's
Is that where he's from?
Yeah. Yeah. He's from Canada. And then I think got remarried. He was married, got divorced, and then remarried. That's what I believe occurred. But what was, you know... He was the kind of guy... Oh, there's my phone. Sorry. Hold on a second.
Anyways. I guess we should edit that out. We will.
Anyway, you there?
Yeah.
So he was the kind of guy that was very, very sharp business-wise and also... had a really great sense of humor. Really good sense of humor. You know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and the other thing is he was very supportive of other people's projects and endeavors. When a new Mac site would launch, he would be one of the first ones to welcome them into Mac publishing. And when you think about it, that's pretty rare in any business. That's like the CEO of McDonald's welcoming in a new mom-and-pop shop. Hey, welcome to Quick Burgers. It just doesn't happen. But it is a little bit different in the Mac community in that there are a lot of competitors out there, but we're all friendly with each other, as Guy can attest to simply being at the press in the press room during the Macworld Expo. How many of our competitors
For the last 2 years.
Yeah, we sit at the same table. We're writing articles right next to somebody who's writing an article for not a sister publication, but a competitor. And we'll compare notes.
Every time one of us gets up from the table, they seem to close their laptop. I don't get that.
That was only one site. And they weren't really a Mac site. They were an iPod site. But I went back and unfortunately, I lost a lot of email on one of my transitions from, I think it was from the G5 to this iMac. But I'm notoriously bad for keeping email. I've got everything over the last couple of years, but beyond that, things
but
tend to get lost.
After a while, it just becomes almost too much to deal with.
Unfortunately, though, Guy, there are some emails that I really, really miss having. For instance, I don't believe I have the last email I got from Stan, but I do have some still. And I never realized this. I never consciously thought about it. But since about 2002, every Christmas I would get an e-card Merry Christmas from Stan.
Oh, that's nice.
And it's just little things like that. I had asked him in 2006 if he wanted to come on the podcast so we can interview him and chat with him. And he said, sure. And I never followed up on that email. I never went and scheduled him or anything. It just kind of slipped through the cracks. So it's times that like that when I'm going back through these emails after Stan died to see, refresh my memory a little bit on some of the correspondence that I had with him, that I realized that, wow, look at that. He agreed to come on the podcast and I never followed through, and how much I regret that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
I'm going to look at all my emails now and look at to see all the ones where Stan.
Now, unfortunately, here at My Mac Magazine, we've had our share of losses when it comes to staff members. We've had four of our staff members over the years pass away. We had Susan Howarder, Ronnie O'Lane, we had Ralph, and we had Mick O'Neill. And, you know, it doesn't get easier over time.
No, but, it doesn't.
You know, so, obviously, to Stan's family, I want to wish them the best and condolences. And for those who are listening, check out MacMinute.com. It hasn't been updated since April 11th. I don't know what the future of MacMinute is, whether someone is going to take it over, whether it's just going to kind of sit there until the domain name expires. I don't know the future of that website. I hope they could continue.
Was he working with somebody else with that?
My understanding was no, that it was pretty much a one-man show at this point. I know he had a couple people that was helping him in the forums, but everything that was getting posted up on the site, my understanding is it was Stan. Now, I could be wrong, and if I am wrong, I hope that whoever was helping him with it, whether they completely take over ownership or at least keep updating it until the ownership of the site can be worked out with Stan's family.
And by the way, if whoever it is, I don't know who to contact, but please contact me. I would like to find out who's running it because it hasn't been updated, obviously. So I'm interested. Just email me, samlevin@mac.com.
Or really, me, Tim at mymac.com, one of us. I would be more than willing to host it and to continue running it if it came to that. I'd prefer someone else did. I seriously don't have the time. But this is something that Stan created. I'd hate to see it die and pass along after Sam died himself. I think that would be sad.
Yep. You know, the guy that was one of his writers was Larry, who then went on to iLounge.
Yes.
So I don't know if he's still iLounge or is he at Uncrate. I forgot which one or the other, but it's kind of interesting how, you know, he's, some of those people have gone on to do some really cool things.
A lot of people have.
Yep.
Let's move on. We're waiting for, I'm hoping that Lee shows up. I know that you said he was kind of probably stuck in the Pope traffic there, Guy.
Right.
Same as you got. Let's take a little bit of a break here. We're going to jump over to John Nemo's All Over the Mac. He's got an interview with a lady named Karen Aravis, I believe it's Aravis. Well, we'll listen and find out right now.
We're delighted this week on All Over the Mac here at the MyMac.com podcast to be interviewing a college professor. What's your name?
Karen Aravis.
And what college or university are you at?
Willamette University in Salem, Oregon.
Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. Is that a large or a small college?
It's a small liberal arts college.
And what is your area of expertise there?
I'm in the Environmental and Earth Sciences Department.
Are you a professor?
Yes, I am.
Do you use computers in your work?
Yes, every day.
Is your campus a Windows campus or a Mac campus?
A little bit of both.
So how does that affect you? Are you a Mac user or a Windows person?
I'm a Mac user, and we have pretty good support for both Mac and PC.
From the campus technical department?
Yes.
Well, how big is your department, and how many of your people use Macintosh?
Well, my department is 5, and I was the only Mac user for a long time, and now there are 4 of us who are using Macintoshes.
So your Windows colleague is the odd person out.
That's right.
And what do you do in a scientific or technical and academic way on the Macintosh at your university?
Well, for teaching purposes, I use it, create PowerPoints for my classes, for class lectures. which then I also put online using a software called Sakai, classroom management software.
How do you spell that?
S-A-K-A-I. I also use it for, you know, making exams, other kinds of things like that. And then for research, I use software specific to my area, which is dendrochronology. So I look at tree rings and use different kinds of software for analyzing the tree rings. I use spreadsheets for organizing data.
Do you have to ever use Windows PC just because there's only a few things that only work on the PC?
Yes, but now with the new MacBook that I have a the hard drive partition so that I have a PC side, Windows side, and some of the software that I need I can actually run right on my MacBook now.
So you have a white MacBook?
Yes, I do.
And what do you think of the glossy screen?
I love it.
Now, on your white MacBook, did the university buy that for you, or did you have to buy it for yourself?
No, they bought it for me. Every 3 years, we get a new office computer, and my turn came this summer.
Do you need to use technical help from the IT staff to install things and troubleshoot, or are you actually able to figure that out yourself?
Well, they have to install all of the soft, like all the Microsoft Word, all those big things we have a site license for, so that's the only way I can get that stuff on the computer. I try to do as much troubleshooting as I can, but, you know, things have gotten more complicated, so a lot of it I can't do anymore.
And do you have Bootcamp or Parallels or VM Fusion installed for your Windows partition?
Not yet.
But you will?
I will, yes.
Okay. Are any of the software applications on a network, so you're actually using network software as opposed to software that's actually local to your machine?
The classroom management software is networked, and there are some statistical programs that are also networked.
Is your campus on one wide network?
I think so.
Are you able to use airport wireless on campus, or do you need to be plugged into an Ethernet cable?
Oh, no, we're wireless across campus.
How long has that been?
I think probably 3 or 4 years we've been wireless.
And do you use an Apple wireless network at your home also?
I do.
Is your husband and daughter, are they Macintosh people?
My daughter is. My husband has a Windows machine for some of his GIS applications that he uses, some of the Esri software.
What's GIS?
A Geographic Information Systems, a computer mapping and analysis application. But he does all the household things and iTunes management on the Mac.
And what about your daughter?
She does all of her word processing and game playing on the iMac.
So does she have her own iMac?
No, she doesn't. We have a family iMac, and she sometimes uses my MacBook when it's home.
What about an iPod? Do you have any iPods in your family?
We have many iPods in my family. I have a Shuffle. Julia has a 40 gig, one of the original iPods. And I'm not sure what my husband has, but he's got one too.
Do you buy AppleCare warranty service on your Apple equipment?
No, because the warranty with my school computer comes with the school takes care of that, and I don't think we've bought a warranty with anything else.
How close are you to your nearest Apple company store?
The nearest Apple store is about 45 minutes away near Portland.
Do you have any local Apple for sales or tech support in your town of Salem, Oregon?
We have a store called the Mac Store, which is different than an Apple Store. It sells Apple products, but it's not an Apple Store. I'm not exactly sure what the difference is.
Do you ever need to go there for sales or support?
Yes. Sometimes we'll buy things there. We may also buy online from Apple.com.
If other people are in the academic field and they're not currently in a Macintosh group, but they want to use Macintosh, what can you suggest to them to persuade their colleagues and administrators and the other nitwits at their campuses that they should be using Mac and not Windows?
To persuade the IT people to switch?
Or to persuade the colleagues. You said you persuaded your colleagues.
Oh, okay. Yes. Mostly what we persuaded my colleagues was the ease with which you can do things in the classroom with the Macs, particularly using PowerPoint and graphics and things like that in class. And there were also some issues. I think that our contract is with Dell for the Windows machines, and a couple of my colleagues just weren't really happy with the laptops that were coming out. And everyone's also obsessed with iPhones, so they want MacBooks too. But in terms of sort of from an academic situation, I know that a lot of the software that chemists use for teaching, for visualizing three-dimensional molecules, is written for Apple products. And I know that a lot of the rhetoric and media studies software that they use in that department is specific to the Mac environment. So I think it really depends on what you're using the computer for. I've just always had really good results with Apple products and been really pleased with them and watched my colleagues complain about their PCs. So,
and as a parent of a young daughter, do you have any advice for parents to help get their kids active and involved and creative and productive on their Macintosh and their iPod?
One of the most important things with a young kid, mine's nine, is to know what they're using it for. YouTube's very easy to get on. and so I don't recommend unsupervised time on YouTube, but there are lots of applications on the web that can be used. And I find it's actually easier for her to navigate on the iMac than watching her at school on the PCs, the way the PC system is set up, and it's pretty slow. So advice to parents is for iPods and iMacs is kind of to let the kids experiment and figure out what they want to do with it, because they're very good at finding things that you never sort of dreamed of, and some of them are really great.
How much internet time does your daughter get?
She's not on every day, but when she's on, maybe half an hour. One of the things we have her do is there's a really great website called freerice.com.
Free rice?
Freerice.com, and it's a vocabulary building website. And every time you correctly identify the definition for a word, 10 grains of rice go into, or 100 grains of rice go into a bowl, and then the people who run the website actually donate that amount of food or money to people who are hungry. Oh. And so she uses it. We that's the deal. She has to do five words on that before she can go to Barbie.com or any of those other websites. So about half an hour a day.
And does she do any games on the computer?
Oh, you mean software? No, yeah. We don't actually have any games.
How about any virtual worlds?
Don't think so yet. I don't know what's on Barbie.com.
Well, we'll have to interview her later on.
Yeah, we'll have to see what
we'll have to find out what's really the dirt under the fingernails.
Yeah. I'm sure there are lots of great applications for kids. We just haven't... She's just shown an interest in the past year, so we haven't really looked into that.
What age do you think it's appropriate for young girls to have pretty much an independent approach to their computer and their iPod?
I think as soon as they're ready. I mean, I think parental control is important. I know of the sites that we block at our router. So.
She just waved at us. She says she's ready.
Yeah, she's ready. So if she's interested, she's ready. It's just, you have to supervise.
We thank you very much for converting your department to Macintosh and for buying Apple products and for being a contributor here on All Over the Mac at the MyMac.com podcast. Bye, Karen.
Goodbye, John.
And thank you very much, John and Karen, for that. We were hoping that Lee would jump in, but he hasn't shown up yet. So if he shows up while we're recording, we'll bring him in on the conversation. But let's go ahead and move on. There's the other big news of the week, other than Stan Flack, was a new company purporting to sell a Macintosh clone. Guy, you wrote up an article on that. Why don't you get us started?
Yeah, there's this company called SciStar in Miami, Florida that was advertised.
Did you say Shyster?
SciStar. And they were advertising that they would sell you a plain vanilla PC, you know, integrated Intel graphics and all the rest of that, for $399. And you had your choice of operating systems. You could put on XP, you could put on Vista, you could put on Linux. And none of that would have, you know, made all that much of a difference until you saw the last choice that they had, which just happened to be Apple's OS X Leopard.
Hmm.
And as from what I've been able to gather, they're using the same kind of tricks that OS X 86 came up with to get around.
My understanding is that they're not using the same kind of tricks. They're using OS X hacks, or what is it, the Open OS X project.
Right.
And they don't have permission to do so.
No, but that was kind of the weird part of it was I can't think of what the guy's name is. It was in some guy in Russia that actually came up with the way to get around the EFI boot problem. And he basically just put it out for anybody to use if they wanted to, as long as they didn't use it for a commercial product, which, of course, you know, SciStar is doing. And apparently he was way up in arms on it, which I found kind of ironic since, you know, this is a guy that created some software to get around Apple's EULA, and he's upset because somebody's selling it against his own EULA.
Hmm. Yeah. There's a really good interview with the people behind this company His name is Pedraza, Rudy Pedraza, at Tom's Hardware. Yep, up at Tom'sHardware.com. Matt Clone Seister slammed Steve Jobs is the name of the article, so you can read that there. Very interesting. I can say that I did call them myself right before we did the podcast, actually, about 20 minutes before, and asked them if they wanted to come on the podcast, and they declined. I will say they were very nice on the phone, though.
Well, you can imagine they're probably getting slammed with all kinds of press.
The person that I talked to, that's exactly what they conveyed to me, that they're getting inundated with interview requests, and at this point, they've decided not to talk to anybody.
Yeah, well, there's a lot more behind this story. The two guys, Rodolfo or Rudy and Roberto Pedraza, also run a number of other websites based out of Florida, one of them being FloridaTech.com. And there was a story that I heard that on the Florida Tech site, if you click on a couple of the links there, it doesn't actually send a service request or anything like that. It actually downloads an .exe file, which I find kind of tricky. Yeah. Some of the other stuff that kind of raises red flags is, since last, just Tuesday, I guess, when this whole thing broke open, they've changed the address of...
The physical address.
The physical address 4 times.
Yes.
Which...
And now that they have an update saying that because of being inundated with orders, that they needed more space, so they're in the process of
moving
into wherever.
Right.
The whole thing seems a little shady to me, but that doesn't mean that it's not real.
And also there, you know, they had some other company that was kind of their merchant gateway, PowerPay, and they've refused to have anything else to do with SciStar. So at the moment, as we're recording this, they're using
PayPal.
Yeah, PayPal, eBay's PayPal to process orders. And they're also saying that earlier it was saying 8 to 10, now it's saying 10 to 12 days build time for all products. So,
interesting.
Yeah, anyone who's listening to this podcast, if you're interested in one of these machines, you know, my advice to you would be to wait for at least 1 month and see how this whole thing shakes out. You know, wait until, you know, see if anybody actually gets one of these machines and how they hold up.
Well, what do you think, Sam?
I got an email from a friend of mine who's this huge PC freak, and he's in the Midwest, and he sent me a thing. You can go get all the stuff yourself and do it all yourself. It looks like a shuttle. Sure. Looks like a shuttle box, you know, those shuttle PCs. So you don't need SciStar to do any of this stuff.
It really depends on your level of expertise. You know, there's a lot of people who just want to buy a computer.
Yeah, but wouldn't they be more interested in a Mac Mini than a cobbled together? Who knows where it comes from, what kind of service you're going to expect,
updates. On paper, these machines really, really sound good. Even their base model, if you include installing Leopard, is $554, which is, you know, cheaper than a Mac Mini. And it includes...
Not by much.
Well, enough. It includes a faster processor. It includes more RAM. It includes a full-size SATA hard drive as compared to the laptop-style drive that the Mini has. And, you know, on paper, as you look at it, it looks really interesting. Now, some of the things that it doesn't have as compared to the Mac Mini, it doesn't have FireWire. That's an extra cost item, though it's, you know, it's not real expensive. And there's also no mention of either wired or wireless networking, which I found to be very odd.
Yeah, nowadays everything's wireless.
Yeah,
right.
And there's plenty of wireless cards out there for you to choose from. But I just found it odd that even if they didn't include it, that it wasn't an option. So how much do these guys really, really know about the Mac market?
Well, they're clone guys, and you know that's what they do. And if you want a Mac, then, you know, there's two ways. You buy it full retail, or you go to what is it called? What are the guys in Vermont?
Small Dog?
Yeah, go to Small Dog. You can get, you know, they're great. And you could buy...
You can,
older machines if you want, you know, if you don't need a spiffy brand new, you know, you could get a Mac Mini that is not Intel and still great. It all depends upon what you're, you know, using it for.
Yeah, you can go right to Apple's refurb site and get some great pricing on last gen Macs. I mean, that's the way I've bought my last two machines is iMac 2.16 Intel, you know, Core 2 Duo machine I got right at the Apple store from the refurb section for about 15-20% off. Same thing with my MacBook Pro.
Yeah, so I don't recommend getting a machine that way as far as the clone way. You know, you get no service from that. You just won't. Not from Apple, that's for sure.
Oh, well, you definitely won't get any service from Apple, and of course it's going to be questionable on what kind of service you're going to get from SciStar. One of the other questions about buying a machine like this is if it becomes at all popular, Apple certainly has, you know, many tricks up its sleeve to make it so that you can't update it, you won't be able to get the 10.5.3 update. You won't be able to get updates to iLife or, you know, whatever other Apple-controlled software that you may put on that machine.
Exactly.
I think at this point, even more compelling than actually buying this Vaporware machine, because at the moment that's really all it is.
Yeah, I don't know anyone either on the web or...
Nobody has one. No one, but I think that this brings up a very interesting larger issue, and that is Apple Macintosh clones. We'll start with you, Sam. Do you think that there's any market for Apple if Apple decided that, okay, we're going to allow clones again, which we both know how likely that is?
Right.
Do you think there's a market for Mac clones at this point?
Well, it's kind of a moot point or a moot question because Steve Jobs is the one that put the kibosh on that. So, sure, there was before with Motorola and who was it?
UMax.
Yeah, Power Computing.
Power Computing. But Apple, you give up some of your, you know, some of your sales to that.
What happened the first time around, and I was doing my Mac magazine then
it
at the time.
It was really
as well.
Badly set up.
Well, initially what Apple was hoping and what their agreement with these companies were was that they would expand the Macintosh market. They would actually sell machines to consumers that Apple wasn't already reaching. They were going to broaden the demographic. Instead of doing that, all the clone manufacturers did was eat into Apple's existing customers. They didn't broaden anything.
Yeah, they went high end. They were competing directly against Apple's, you know, their Apple's high end.
Not all of them, but enough of them. But they were only really marketing these machines to existing Mac users. They were not going out of their way. You know, Daystar wasn't, UMax wasn't, Power Computing wasn't. Nobody was going out of their way to market to a segment that Apple wasn't already marketing to. So they weren't doing anything to increase the market share of the Mac platform. And that's what their mandate was supposed to be, that they were going to increase the Mac market share.
And it was supposed to be just the low end.
Well, no, not necessarily just the low end, but Apple really didn't think that anybody was going to try to compete with them at the high end, because at the time... I forget the name of the Power Computing, whatever it was the highest Mac you can get. And it was, according to Apple, that should have been the Power Mac 9500.
Right.
But this machine that Power Computing came out with for $1,000 or more or less was eating its lunch.
Yep.
And that's really the reason that...
Same thing with the UMax S900.
Yes, but the UMax also had low-end models that...
Oh, yeah.
Were eating Apple's low-end lunch.
Well, they had the 603-based C500s and C600s, and then their two 604 machines was a J, I think it was a J700 was a desktop, and the S900 was a large tower.
Yeah, I remember.
One of the things that the clone manufacturers were able to do was move on new technologies much faster than Apple was able to.
Not so much that they were able to, but that they were willing to.
Well, the quality control within Apple was such that they couldn't, if a new processor came out, it would take months before Apple would roll them out into their machines because they went through a lot of testing and all of that.
Also, ATA support.
Whereas the company, exactly. As in, but with the clone manufacturers, they didn't go through those kind of processes.
They didn't care.
They just slapped them in, they worked, they sold them. So on paper, they were eating Apple's lunch. And in real world benchmarks, they were definitely eating Apple's lunch. So they didn't help Apple at all. If anything, they were hurting Apple. And that's why Steve Jobs put a kibosh on it.
Well, if Apple was going to try this again, the only way it would work would be if they were willing to stop selling computers.
Yeah, and I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No, I don't either.
When you look at how much money Apple makes on hardware, I mean, that's what Apple sells. They sell exceptionally good hardware that just so happens to be the only computers or handheld devices or iPods, whatever.
Right.
That happens to run the software that Apple makes that makes those hardware
now, there's, products there, there's, so there's good. There's possibly one other way that they could do it. It would require them to stop making the Mac Mini, which, of course, I don't think would be that much of a hardship, but possibly also stop making the iMacs. And that would be to contract with, you know, two or three of the big motherboard makers over there in Asia and put together maybe three to four different types of motherboards that basically whoever it was that wanted to make Apple clones would have to purchase. And since Apple with their high end is already covered, you know, because they're using the high end Intel server chips, they could set these motherboards up to where they would only work with Core 2 Duos and Core 2 Quads, you know, whatever it is that Intel comes out with within that platform. And, you know, basically sell only the high end for themselves and let all these other companies deal with the low end. Still be able to offer support because they know that the hardware that's being put into these machines, you know, have been tested and will work well within Apple's parameters.
Well, we know that a bunch of PC companies have voiced that they wanted to clone or license. Well,
including Dell.
That's right. Well, early on, I believe, if I'm right, Gateway wanted to as well.
Yep. So there's definitely interest in the hardware manufacturer side. I think there's zero interest or, to be quite frank, a need on Apple's part to allow anybody else to make the Macs because I don't see Apple struggling to gain market share. In fact, one of the big stories of the week was that Apple jumped to number 4 in U.S. sales over Toshiba.
Right. Wow.
No, Apple has been firing in all cylinders. But and part of the reason why they were having so much trouble in the 90s was, you know, they had these basically three lines of computers. They had the Quadras, they had the Centris, and they had the Performa lines. And they would just throw product out where there was, you know, the only real difference between some of these models was like minor software changes within bundling.
Yeah.
And people didn't know what to buy. You know, they'd buy something one week, you know, the next week it's superseded by something else, and the week after that it would be superseded by something else past that. So people became gun-shy and were typically holding on to their machines probably longer than Apple really wanted them to. So, the other thing is, it's not like Apple doesn't have holes in their product lineup.
Well, and I know what you're talking about. You're talking about the mid-level tower, something that's upgradable, that's greater than a Mac Mini, greater than an iMac, but yet less than a Mac Pro.
It's not necessarily, you know, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, you know, I want this mini tower so I can change out my graphics card and I can do, you know, change this and change that, you know, make all these changes. Mostly what I want this tower for is just to be able to have more internal storage. And if they could have a machine that was the only thing you could change and use the iMac motherboard, and the only thing you could do with that machine beyond RAM would be to put in bigger hard drives, I'm sold.
What do you think, Sam? Would you be interested in a mid-level tower?
Maybe,
or would you have to answer your phone first?
No, I think that's Steve Jobs. Hold on, let me get it. A second.
He's saying, what products did you guys come up with this week? Because,
Steve,
man, the SciStar is killing us.
Yeah. That is Steve. He wants to know, he wants to know why you're talking crap. And he is sick of it. He's going to drive his Mercedes to MyMac HQ and bitch slap both of you.
Well, let me tell you something, Steve. Let me tell you something, Steve. I think you should
beep, 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 second. Beep, beep, beep. Let me call him back. Can I call you back? Are you in the car? Are you in the car?
The Mercedes.
All right, bye. Thanks. Yep,
Apple's first quarter sales.
That was him, and he said, listen, you know, I just had enough of your crap, and I would not want to be in your shoes when he sends, you know, Gino over there.
Yeah. Bring it.
Believe me, they monitor this stuff. They have the whole Patriot Act down with us. You know, they just got us bugged. They're going to throw us in Mac jail. You know what Mac jail is, guys, right? It's when a bunch of Windows people are just surrounding you. And they're just hitting the start key constantly. Yeah. Start, start, start.
Yeah, I talked about that in my feature. I talked about the eye prison where you have to eat eye food and you're surrounded by eye guards.
No, it's yeah. Anyway,
Elizon.
Apple's first quarter sales this for 2008, they sold 1.01 million computers.
Yep.
So. That's a lot of Macs being sold in one quarter. Hello, Lee Givens.
Hey, everybody.
How are you?
Oh, not bad.
You get caught up in the Popey traffic?
Well, it's a little more than that. We actually had we did a software release today.
Why, of course you.
And we had a little bug fix thing we had to take care of.
That's always fun at the last minute, isn't it? Oh, that's not working.
What's going on with that?
So you were asking about, before Steve Jobs called me, what do I think that there's a market, or what was the question? I'm sorry.
Well, and I'll ask Lee as well. Do you think there's a market for a mid-level tower machine from Apple? Something processor-wise, about the same as an iMac, except it's a tower. It doesn't come with a monitor, but it's less than a Mac Pro.
Yeah, you know... I used to always think there was a room for a mid-range machine for people who, you know, have existing LCD monitors, and there's still a group of people out there who kind of mistrust the idea of buying a built-in LCD. You know, what happens if it fails and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I do think there's a market that has the power of something like a little more than a Mac Mini, but a lot less than a Mac Pro.
Yeah, even if it was like a year and a half ago's Mac Pro, deeply discounted, to, you know, maybe $1,199.
Yeah.
Do you think that there is a market for that right now?
I would think there'd probably be a bigger market if it got in the sub $999 range.
Yeah.
I mean, just use, you know, stick with Core 2 Duos, you know, the Core 2 Quads that are coming out.
Basically an iMac.
An iMac without the screen, right.
Headless iMac.
And, you know, using the laptop-style graphics card that they use in the iMacs, I don't care. I don't care that I can't change out the processor. All I want to be able to do is have more internal freaking storage.
Well, what you're talking about, Guy, is a shuttle. If you go to shuttlepc.com, they have that's exactly what that box is. A lot of, not just kids, but, you know, adults are taking these things and going off and doing wireless war gaming, bringing their shuttles and having, you know, a lot of fun with these things. Some of them are full-blown, really fast PCs. So it's got, you could put terabyte of storage or more, maybe even two, in these things. And my friend, that's what he uses in the Midwest. He's a PC guy and he loves it. And it's like a little box. It's the size of a lunch pail.
It has a handle on top too, right?
As long as I can pop in an OS X system disk and install OS X without any hassle, without having to do any patches, without having to reburn a DVD, without having to download something else that's not from Apple, that's what I want.
Well, that's not the case today. But what I'm saying is Apple could make that, what we're all talking about, they could do it, and they could make a shuttle PC that is way more powerful than an iMac. Of course, there's a reason. There's reasons why they're not doing this, and it's I don't have all the reasons, but you know, they figured they can sell just a lot more iMacs than they could the shuttle, the mid range.
They'll never know till they try.
Well, I don't know if they would do that, but that's what you want. It's a shuttle PC, and there's a bunch of manufacturers that make it.
From somebody that will just let me load OS X,
right?
Without the hassle.
Yeah, well, good luck with that. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. Another big thing this week, and we're actually running promos for these, two different bundles came out. Now, everybody knows about, Mac Heist.
Right. Yes.
They made all the news a couple months ago. They're back. They have a retail package, and you can still buy it online, $49, and you get a lot of programs in there, top 12 programs. For $49, you get Overview, Awaken, Cha-Ching, Cover Sutra, Devon Think Personal, iClip, Overflow, Wallet, Write Room, Xlimmer, Enigmo, Bugdom 2. I loved the first Bugdom, by the way.
Yeah, that
And Nanosaur. And Nanosaur 1 was a fun game.
Yeah.
All that for $50.
Nanosaur 2 is really good, too.
Yes. All that for $50. So far, as we record this, they've sold almost 62,000 bundles.
Yeah.
Is that a good price?
Yeah, but are these like full versions? And
yes, I think that that problem's been taken care of at this point, Guy.
Because I downloaded the Mac update one, that bundle. I guess we'll talk. Let's stick with that one until we get to it. So, go ahead.
Yeah, but do you think this is a bundle that's worthwhile? $50 for all these programs?
Oh yeah,
yeah, definitely.
The other one is from Mac Update. By the way, the owner of Mac Update lives not 20 miles away from me, and I've only met him once in another city 50 miles away. In fact, you were there for that guy when we met. We were actually going to have him on the show tonight. Something came up at the last minute. He couldn't make it. I wanted him to come on and talk about this promo, the bundle that they're selling.
Right.
It's a little bit more expensive. It's $65, so $15 more, and it has these, you know, you have to unlock, or you have to, how do I put this? They have to sell enough bundles for it to unlock the other software. And if they don't reach that goal, anybody who's bought this bundle won't get these programs. But what you can
they've
get right now
so
for
far,
$65.
Fantastic.
Yeah, Hazel, Art Text, Menu Clock, or Menu Calendar Clock, Leap, Story Mill, Typinator, and DVD Remaster Pro. Right, those are some good programs right there.
Yeah, DVD Remaster Pro is kind of similar to what was the program?
Toast?
No, to the one you guys were using to burn all those DVDs for the Apple TV.
Oh, well, it's not Handbrake? That we burn it, but Handbrake.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to Handbrake. I was trying out Art Text because I did get this bundle, and
did you click the link from my Mac, by the way?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
Good. That means I'll get paid.
Cool. Art Text is my only complaint so far with everything that I've looked at is Art Text is not the full program. There are parts of it that you have to go and get and buy an update to get it to work. Now, what is unlocked on it works very, very well, and I'm very pleased with it. Some of the stuff that's missing, you know, I can't think of what it was right now off the top of my head. But it allowed you to do a lot more customization, you know, within the Art Text program. But it is still a great bundle.
Well, I could say that I don't quite like the fact that you have to buy and they have to sell so many units before it unlocks these other software titles. And then anybody who's bought it will then get these other software titles. I think that's kind of crappy to do that, to be honest. Right now, the Mac promo update, or I'm sorry, the Mac update promo has sold 1,574 bundles as we speak, which is about, 60,000 less than Mac Heist. And I think a lot of that has to do with promotion and name recognition.
Yeah.
But if they sell another 3,500 copies of this, it'll unlock Sound Studio, which is a fabulous program.
Yes.
And hopefully, like you say, Guy, that this is a full version. It's no crippleware. You got to update and pay a little bit extra for the other features.
Right.
After that is Banner Zest. I don't know anything about that program.
Yeah, and then, if you wanted to compare the two.
Well, hold on a minute, Guy. The last product that you can get with the Mac Update promo, which I think is the best deal of any one of these bundles, is Parallels Desktop.
Right.
That right there is an $80 program. I have Parallels Desktop, and it works. It's awesome. I use it to run XP, Vista, and Linux, and it does it flawlessly. So, they're going to have to step up their promotion here. Or do something, because they're not even coming close to unlocking these other software
titles. Yeah, what's the limit before they get to Parallels?
It doesn't say. At least I haven't seen it. 5,000 bundles sold, and then they unlock Sound Studio. And I'm looking, and I don't see where it lists what the... I don't see. Maybe it's just every 5,000 it unlocks something else. I'm not sure, but it doesn't say. And I wish it did, because... If I was going to invest in this, and in fact, a relative of mine called me about 2 hours ago and said, "Hey, I saw these things up on your website about these bundles. Should I get any of these?" And I'm like, "Do you need any of these software titles? I don't know." I said, "Well, if you don't know, then chances are no, don't buy it." And that's kind of a rule of thumb. If you don't see something you need, then save your money. Not to say that these software titles are great, but or aren't any good, I should say. They are, but if you don't need it, save your money.
And as far as the Mac,
of the two bundles, which bundle do you think is more valuable, Guy?
I would say, honestly, the Mac Update promo bundle is...
If it unlocks everything.
Well, even if it doesn't unlock everything. For $65, you're getting... you're getting StoryMill, which is really a fabulous program. My son Peter uses it all the time. ArtText is great. I haven't tried Hazel yet, and I haven't tried Typinator yet, but I'm definitely going to start using Menu Calendar Clock, and I'm not even sure what Leap does.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. What do you think, Lee? Is this something that... Which bundle are you most interested in?
Well, I love Parallels. That's our standard virtualization software at AOL, and I use it every day. But I don't know. I kind of like the Mac Heist. I've been a big fan of the Mac Heist group for a while, so...
Devin Think Personal is a good program. I can vouch for that. So is iClip.
Yeah, I've been actually using iClip for a little while. A friend of mine got me into iClip a while back. So I have little pieces of each one of the bundles, so I'm like, which one's more valuable to me?
The menu calendar? Who's doing that?
The menu calendar? Yeah. That one is the Mac Update promo.
Well, the menu calendar I've been using for like 2 years, and it's great. Absolutely great. Hmm. But, you could buy it standalone. I don't know what it costs, but... it's a great product.
Do you think it's fair, or do you think it's kind of shady to have these unlocked milestones, or do you think that's just kind of the way it is? Obviously, the developers probably put that in, say, hey, you got to sell at least 10,000 before we're going to give our program away in this one. They're not giving it away, but before we take a hit. I mean, with Parallels Desktop, people are buying that program for $80 already anyway.
Right.
They don't really need to be in with Mac Update, I don't think. But, obviously they are, but they're their last milestone, so they're probably going to have to sell, I'd probably say, 15,000 copies of this bundle before everybody starts getting
it. Yeah. It's an interesting ploy.
Yeah, they're going to have to increase the pace, too, because I think they have about 12 days to sell them.
12 days to go right now. And now we're assuming, though, where it says how many bundles are sold at the top of their screen... we're assuming that that's being updated as a bundle is being sold, and that's not hard coded. So, okay, we sold another 4,000. Go ahead and update the site. I don't know. I haven't seen that change in the last couple hours, and I got to imagine at least one person has bought it since then. How smart do you think Mac Update promo is to go live at exactly the same time as the Mac Heist? Because let's be honest, the Mac Heist has a lot more PR behind them. They're going to get a lot of attention.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, I think. And yeah, I just refreshed. One person just bought one.
Yeah. Really? So for me, it says 1574. I'm going to refresh, and it says 1575. So one person did just buy one. I'm going to try it with the Mac Heist. Right now, it says 61771. Refresh, and it says 61771. So that one hasn't been updated. Although they do have their total raise for charity so far, $712,937.
Well, yeah, I think that's a nice twist too with the Mac Heist bundle too.
I wonder how difficult it would be to make My Mac Magazine into a charity organization here.
Send your checks now to Tim Robertson.
I could use a little of that. You know, there's something that I've been meaning to say, and I never mention it, and I know Sam and Guy are doing the same thing. I'm on Twitter, so if anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, it's just twitter.com/MyMac.
And same for me, Sam Levin.
Sam? What about you, Guy?
Mac Parrot.
Mac Parrot? Lee, are you on Twitter?
You know, I just got into Facebook.
I have Facebook.
I just started this MySpace thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been on LinkedIn for a long, long time. So,
in fact, I just hooked up with you on LinkedIn.
Actually, a couple of my fellow MyMac folks sent me invites.
I don't remember how I found you. I was totally browsing someone else, and I saw your name, and I went, oh my gosh, I didn't even think to hook up with Lee. Duh. There's an option in LinkedIn to send an email out to everybody in your certain contact list if you're on Yahoo or Gmail. So I did it with my Gmail, and it sent out, you know, a whole bunch of them.
Oh, okay.
And one of the people who responded and joined my LinkedIn network, I don't remember who it was at this point. I could go on LinkedIn and find it pretty quick. He must have entered one of our contests at one point, because that's how I had his contact information in my Gmail account. And he had... I had no idea who he was, but he was like, oh, yeah, I'd be happy to join. I think his quote was, I'm just a lowly AppleScript guy. Anybody who's connected with a CEO of Apple Computer, I definitely want to join your network because I'm connected with Gillum Eliel. So it was funny. He was like, wow, who's this guy wanting to join my network?
And it was Steve Jobs.
He's connected to Gillum Eliel. Yeah, no, it's not Steve Jobs. It's Gillum Eliel. But no, so I am on Twitter. So anybody that wants to follow me on Twitter, join up, and I will follow you back. I don't follow everybody back. I do follow a lot of people. I follow more people that follow me. I could say
yeah,
that.
Same
I
here.
Think there's less than 100 people are following me so far, but I really haven't promoted it heavily. Right now, I've got 85 followers, and I follow 117.
You should put Twitter on the My Mac page.
I probably will. Right now, if you go into archives and then click my name, Tim Robertson, you'll actually see me right there. Also, if you go to my archive page at mymac.com, there's a link to my LinkedIn page as well. So
right.
Anybody that wants to join my LinkedIn network, feel free. Or, hey, my friend's code for my Wii is there, and as is my Xbox 360. I'm connected all over the place, wow. Darn it. But I don't promote myself out there like a lot of people do. I don't, hey, join my... You know, this, that, and the other. Let's connect over here on Twitter. I don't usually do that, and I think maybe I should. I think that it would be of benefit. Sam, do you think that Twitter's a benefit?
Yeah, I mean,
like us?
It. Look, you follow, and they follow for specific reasons. If they're tired of whatever it is, they unfollow, and that's the same way. I think it's a really cool sounding board. Of course, it's.
I have people following me that I don't know who they are, but I think it's cool. It's a good way to meet
people,
too. I get
that all the time, and I check their site out. Some of it's of interest. Some of it isn't. I get people from around the world. I've got about 120 or 30 or I forgot now that are following me, and I follow about the same. And there's some people, yeah. If you go to Twitterholic, go check out Twitterholic, guys, and look at the list of how many people – that's the top 100, and there's some that are 25,000 people that are following certain people.
It's crazy.
And they list it. You know, there's even guys, I don't know if you know Nick Starr. Nick is – he's got 1,000 people or something like that following him. And he talks about some mundane stuff sometimes, like I'm going to go work out. But that's the way it is with Twitter. He's also – pretty interesting because he's a huge Mac guy.
I was doing a lot of Twitter posts, basically what Twitter was made for, just basically telling people what I was doing at any one time. But I kind of pulled back on that a little bit, and what my Twitter posts are now are Mac-related. At least I try to make it more related to what people know me about, which is, you know, My Mac Magazine and MyMac.com and this right. podcast. I try to focus it more on that than anything else. I think that's going to... do you think that's good or do you think that's bad? Should I be, you know, I'm doing dishes right now.
It doesn't matter. You know? It doesn't matter because the person that's following you, guys, or Tim, they're going to filter what they see is useful, non-useful. If you become noise to, you know, to important ratio, if that noise is too high, they unfollow you. And there's a guys that I'm following, and he kept posting every 30 seconds, you know, I'm doing this, I'm doing this, I'm doing this. I finally sent him an email, and I said, hey, listen, Sam, his name is Sam. I said, Sam, your stuff is noise. And I said, if you keep remaining, keep doing that, I'm going to unfollow. But it doesn't, it's fine. I unfollowed, but that's just me.
That was my concern, that I didn't want to start following everybody that's just posting, you know, rubbish all the time. But by the same token, I didn't want to be one of those people that, I figure if I post two or three times a day on Twitter, that's probably good. You know, that's probably as much as anybody really wants to read anything that I have to say or what I'm doing. But there are some people that I started following because it was really interesting, and they're starting to fall into that noise. They're just
The unfollow, and you know that's the beauty of Twitter. But there's also organizations that are on there. There's political candidates that I'm following. Dave Weiner is really interesting. He's following him about his whole Comcast thing, which is, you know, kind of neat and different. But he's different, you know, that's an understatement. And there's Daring Fireball or John Gruber, and he's a riot. And then there's, you know, Foul Bastard. He's hilarious. I mean, that guy is
Foul Bastard. Okay, I'm going to type that in. We'll say it again.
Foul. Foul. And he's...
All right, I'm searching for him right now. Is he the one that has the little gremlin?
He does
gremlin?
Twitter Babe of the Week. He's like crazy, but he's funny. And one of the best is Tweet Jeebus. That's Tweet Jeebus, as in he's effigy is Jesus, and it's so funny. He's one of the cleverest writers besides John Gruber that I have seen.
Now, Lee, how much pull do you have with AOL to put something on the Mac side at AOL? So if, like, you started an AOL Mac Twitter, is that something that AOL, your parent company, will allow you to do and then promote it on the AOL site?
Yeah, you know, they're giving us a lot more flexibility to do things. Like, if you, you know, when I started up the Mac at AOL blog, I think maybe a year ago, a year or two ago, it would have been a lot tougher. But, I mean, you start to see everybody, even our EVP and our team is actually creating a blog, and he's actually writing to it. So I think it's becoming more and more commonplace. So I wouldn't think there would be too many hurdles I'd have to go through to get that up.
Do you think this would be something that, not just Twitter, but anything of that nature, that would benefit a company like AOL to attract new users, new subscribers, or at least to be able to contact them directly, that the people that are using your service would feel more at ease with knowing the people that are actually running or in charge of the software?
Yeah, you start to see a lot of that. And if you start looking at some of the tools, you know, things that we've had for a long, long time, like AIM. AIM, the guys are thinking of every new thing they could do, and they've come up with, you know, services like Whimsy that allow you to do, like, sort of IM from your web page. But, you know, I think some of those things are, you know, AOL's, you know, they're a little slower to the party, and we just purchased Bebo. So I think the social media is definitely finding its way in every corner, every nook and cranny of the company. So I think all these different types of social tools are, you know, all you know, it started probably with the old CB radio, moved to AIM, instant messaging. Now it's everywhere.
Yep.
And it seems to only be getting bigger nowadays.
Yeah, definitely.
Unfortunately, it looks like the my partner in my other venture is backing out at this point, so I have to, for this idea that I have, and I believe I shared that idea with you, Sam, I'm not sure. I'm going to have to find a new partner, somebody to work with. And it is one of these type of social networking, social media type of things. So I'm always interested in hearing how larger companies would use something like this. So it's definitely interesting. And have you guys been following Crossover Mac at all? And being able to play games on your Mac with this piece of software without booting into Windows?
Right. I am very interested in that.
Yeah, well, you're going to be even more interesting next week, Guy, because we're going to have Jeremy White. He's the CEO of Codeweavers on the show. So we're going to chat with him next week. I think that's going to be interesting. I'm very interested in finding out how this works, how stable it is. Can you actually play games? I'm really interested in this product.
Yeah, using their wine libraries, it was pretty weird when I was using it originally for doing, you know, just getting IE6 to launch really quickly. Just to do website testing, and it's really kind of neat.
Obviously, David Cohen's not here this week.
Florida.
He's on Twitter, by the way. I believe he's David B. Cohen on Twitter, if anybody wants to follow David. Let's not leave David out of that conversation. And he won't be here again next week, but he will be back on in May. So I did get some email saying, when's he coming back? Next month, he'll be here. So next week, we have Jeremy White from Codeweavers, and the week after that, Larry O'Connor, of course, from Mac Sales or Otherworld Computing, as they're also known. So I'm looking forward to chatting with both of those gentlemen. We've got guests lined up all the way through right now, the end of May. So we're going to have a lot more guests coming up on the show. And, of course, sometimes people will be dropping off, you know, conflicts and stuff like that. One of the people that we got coming up on the 8th, and I know you're going to enjoy this guy, is our friend BJ.
Oh, right. Hey, haven't talked to him since Macworld.
Since Macworld. I stay in touch with him some, and I'm looking forward to getting BJ on the show. He was actually on our second or third podcast we recorded this year at the Macworld Expo, so that's going to be very interesting. Right now, new up at the MyMac website, David Weeks has a review of the iOmega Ego 250 gigabyte portable hard drive. It's FireWire 400, of course.
Remember, I did a Comac Picks on it 3 weeks ago.
Of that, a month ago. Yeah. Let's see. David gave this a 4.5 out of 5. So the only thing that he said he didn't like about it is, I don't know. I didn't see anything that he didn't like.
It's a really good drive. It's great because it's got FireWire USB combination. Comes in a bunch of colors. You can't get better than that.
He got the red one.
That's what I have.
The red.
Yep.
Is it?
Yep.
Carmel Glover, our writer from the UK, I'm sorry, from Australia, reviewed a book, The Presentation Zen, Simple Ideas on Presentation Design and Delivery. So anybody that's working in a corporate environment that has to work in presentations, you might want to buy this book. And anybody who's sat through a long PowerPoint presentation will say, ugh. Jeez. So this might
very
be something
few
that,
the, very few of them of, have Steve Jobs' charisma.
Corporate America should be investing in this book, I think. Russ Walkowicz reviewed the STM Small Rogue Laptop Bag. Guy Searle wrote a When the Deal is No Deal, How a Little PC Company Advertised a Mac-compatible computer and lost.
So far.
Donnie Inkelo has a video chatting for iSightless Macs for under $100. There's a lot of Macs right now that people are buying that don't have a built-in iSight. Yeah. What do they do?
Well, you can get several different webcams, and Logitech makes some really great ones too.
And Donnie talks about that Logitech one and his Macspiration 110. He said he's actually going to further that article in the future as well. Got a lot of people interested in it. Russ Walkowicz did a laptop sleeve review, the Spire Edge, and that's all from Russ Walkowicz. John Nemo did a SA6 in-ear headphone review, and David Weeks did a Adobe Photoshop Element 6 failure. He had a lot of problems when he installed that software. I don't know if you guys read that or not. Has anybody else here installed Photoshop Element 6?
I actually had it in Amazon to buy, and then I read this, and I was like, ooh.
Well, we also have a review coming up next week from Russ Walkowicz, and he gives it pretty high marks. So whether David Weeks just had a bad day, or his experience is more true than Russ had, I don't know. We'll find out as time goes on. And, of course, my article on Stan Flack, who again died this week. You weren't with us, Lee. Did you know Stan Flack?
I've been a follower of Stan's websites, but I've never actually got to meet him.
He's a real nice guy. It's a sadder world without Stan in it. He innovated so much.
Definitely.
And hopefully, if anybody in his family or some of his friends listen to this podcast, our respects go out to you. But that's the end of the show this week. We'll be back next week. Again, we'll have Jeremy White from Code Weavers, unless, you know, a conflicting schedule pops up. Lee, are you going to be available next week?
Yeah, I should be in town next week.
We're going to have a Sam Levin Cool Mac Picks next week, Sam?
Yes, and we are going to be giving away iPhone and iPod Touch cases next week.
Oh, contest coming up.
And,
sweet.
Yes.
Interesting, that is.
We will give you some. Lee, you can have one, and maybe Guy, if he's really nice.
Be nice, Guy.
No,
well,
wouldn't
I first have to have an iPhone?
Yeah, it might help.
No. iPod Touch, iPhone. If you have any of those, this company makes them all. And BlackBerry they make, too.
Well, go ahead and say the name of the company.
Yeah, Casemate.
Casemate. We've reviewed a lot of Casemate products over
the
years.
They're really cool, and they have a new one called Naked.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in that.
It's pretty cool. You'll get those when they're out. They sold them all out. In one day, they sold everything. Once they put it on their website, they sold out. It's pretty cool. It's electrostatic membrane. We'll get into that next week.
Cool. I did forget to say that Gil Polson, our new writer, did review the Wave for iPhone. That's a case as well. I believe, did you talk about that at all, Sam? It's from Griffin.
What is it? I just got it's the acrylic and rubberized. No, I have it. I've got to check it out. It looks cool. I tested the Clear Boost.
Yeah. Well, Gil gave this one a 3 out of 5. So it's an average product according to Gil. Your mileage may vary. So as we wrap it up again, I want to thank Guy, Sam, and Lee for coming on the show this week. Our condolences go out to Sam, or I'm sorry, go out to Sam. Well, yeah, he's chatting with us.
Goes without saying.
Sam, thanks a lot for being on the entire show this week. I believe this is the first time you've been on the entire show.
It's the first time. I'm very excited. Thank you. But I do want to put a message to Stan and his family. He was a cool guy, very nice guy, and a visionary. And I'm going to miss him. He was 42 years old, and that's way too young.
Yep.
Too young. So we're going to do something for him. We're talking about it. So
yep, there's plans in the works. Right. In fact, we already have some kind of a URL thing going. So that's all we're going to say about that.
All right.
And again, congratulations to Larry Ballantyne for winning Chris Siebold's new book, Big Book of Apple Hacks. We'll be back next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.